From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect.
Well, I'm back. most of the week off, celebrating Memorial Day, actually commemorating on Memorial Day, but spending that time with my wife. Actually, Monday was our 39th wedding anniversary. Just looked it up because Brian Cochran is in studio. A friend of his just celebrated their first, and I was pretty sure that was paper anniversary. Yes, and in case you're taking notes, 39th would be lace. That's not traditional, but I guess it's kind of what they go with if you look it up. But we had a great time together for the week. Well, we always have a great time together, but enjoyed spending time traveling in the car with my wife, and I am back. You know, most of the shows this week, great content, but de-airing a lot of content we've brought to you recently. Today, it's a full hour with Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates. Before we get to our conversation with Brian, I want to make sure you know you're invited to tune in tomorrow, Saturday. I don't know if you haven't found Bible School of the Air. What a great time to be tuned in. It starts at noon and goes till about 5 o'clock. Starts with Chuck Smith. He's currently in the book of Ephesians. And these are unproduced, you know, not like the shows that we air during the week. These are more like podcast teachings, verse by verse. You get to consume a full teaching from Chuck Smith at noon this week. He's, again, in Ephesians chapter 5. Frank Turek, we're picking something that he's done on his cross-examined YouTube channel each week, something fairly new. And this week we picked The Uncomfortable Truth Every Christian Needs to Know About Islam with his guest pastor Martin Sedra. That's followed this week by Skip Heitzig. Skip's on every Saturday in the third hour of Bible School of the Air. He's in 1 Thessalonians. And then a Q&A with Scott Richards, A Reason for Hope, is the fourth class at 3 o'clock. Paradas, the podcast from the Veritas International University. They are currently covering the nature of God and inerrancy. So some great, great content to tune in for those 5 hours on Bible School of the Air. And listen, tuition's paid for. All you got to do is show up, and your host, Kelly, will walk you through each hour, each class, each professor, each teacher. Tune in. Check it out over the weekend. Look for our complete programming guide on the web at klyt.fm. As I mentioned, Brian Cochran, president of John Moore Associates, in studio with us for the full hour today. Brian, welcome.
Yeah, always good to be here in person.
And I'll thank you in advance for the diligent work you put towards today's content. Essentially, we're going to be looking at money and marriage.
Yeah, we've touched on this a few different ways in the past, specifically around goal-oriented planning and things like that. But I think today will be a little more direct, pretty fitting on the week of your anniversary,
Steve, yeah,
that we talk about money and marriage.
Well, listen, whether you've been married for a year or 39 years, there's transcendent truth that's found in the Word of God that you're well-equipped, Brian. We've mentioned it before. You're a certified kingdom advisor in addition to the other letters that follow your name as a financial planner.
Yep, certified financial planner and certified kingdom advisor.
Yeah. And we've mentioned before that, you know, with Certified Kingdom Advisor, this is looking at the truths of stewarding our resources given to us by God to steward, because they are His, using the Word of God. And we're going to do some of that today. Let's jump in. You know, I like the notes you gave us, because it got me thinking, you know, if you just say to someone, money, what comes to mind? You know,
yeah, it's not just the numbers.
Yeah, or a bag of gold, or an IOU from the government, or
no, it's especially as we talk about marriage and money today. I think it's important to acknowledge that money is so much more than just, you know, some bills in your wallet, or, you know, the balance you see when you pull up your app and see your bank account. You know, money hits on trust and priorities and hopes and dreams and security and generosity, and even sometimes our identity gets wrapped up in our net worth and our money. So it's a tough issue, and that's why I think within marriage, it's not just about how much is coming in and out on the checking account every month. There's a lot to it, and that's why money makes its way into a common issue with marriage and why it can feel so personal.
Yeah. Why do you suppose it gets there so quickly?
I think because everything in our life is impacted by money.
Yeah.
Or money impacts everything in our lives. So I think about some of the families we serve who have children going through addiction issues. Well, guess what? They got to pay for rehab care.
Yeah.
We've got couples who have major illnesses. Well, guess what? Money shows up there as you're paying for your co-pays and your deductibles. And or if you've got a kid who's growing up, well, guess what? College is coming up.
It's really woven in.
You know, it's every part of our lives eventually becomes a money decision for most people. And the hard thing with money with couples, I think, is every money decision eventually affects both spouses. You know, some people keep their money pretty separate. Most couples we serve handle things very jointly and mutually, but every money decision is going to affect both spouses. And we see some people try to hide from that by keeping separate accounts, especially some of our younger couples. It's kind of a newer generational thing where, you know, there's yours, mine, and ours. But in the end, you're filing your taxes jointly, most likely. Your income is being used jointly in most cases. So you can try to hide that fact. But we see that also with some couples with second marriages, where maybe there was some financial infidelity,
right,
if you will, that in the second marriage they want to protect themselves. And
I have a family member who their marriage ended over, I don't know if it would be considered financial infidelity, but, you know, where did that five-digit figure go that we didn't talk about? That's just a fact. That ended a marriage that I'm aware of. So it is impactful. But we've got some great things to cover. And even in this segment, I mentioned at the beginning, we'll be sharing some scripture. Let's walk through more of the introduction about some of these financial decisions that really affect both spouses. And, you know, like you mentioned, accounts, whether they're shared or separate.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things is that every money decision can either bring you closer, you know, it can be a source of unity, if you will, or it can split you up a little bit and make a source of division.
Yeah.
So, and there are some things that are maybe a little bit closer to the middle, but rarely is money a neutral party with any relationship. So, you know, if you think about it as you make big decisions, especially as a couple, you know, I think it's important to look at it in that light of like, okay, the way I handle this is either going to bring us closer or split us apart. And that's why I think couples often experience that stress around money is, you know, you compound that over the hundreds or even thousands of money decisions we make every month. And if there's a lot of division happening, if there's a lot of misalignment in values and priorities, it builds up over time. And people often avoid the conversations around money because it can be so emotional. And even with the person you love and you've chosen to spend your life with, your spouse, it can be hard to speak kind truths or to ask for what you need if you think it's going to make the other party upset. It really becomes a big sticking point for a lot of couples. And the good news is that, you know, you can work on this like anything else in your marriage. You can build better communication, better principles, better understanding of one another.
I'll tell you this.
Can help.
I mentioned earlier, 39th wedding anniversary. We are more really working together on our finances now than any time in our marriage. And it brings to mind a question, you know, whether we're talking about the first anniversary, paper anniversary, or the lace anniversary at 39 or anywhere in between. These problems, does age seem to be a factor when you're looking at the things that couples are dealing with?
I think relationships mature over time, with what you've experienced, Steve, like that, the unity you have now probably came as a result of better
work,
communication over time, probably some mistakes made by both or one or the other. But no, I think age does have a factor just in the sense that, you know, young couples that are just married for the first time, you know, there's a learning curve there, just like everything in life.
Yeah.
And I know I've been through plenty of learning in my 18 years of marriage. So it's not that the young people are not as smart as the old people. It's just they're just not as experienced. And I think communication is something we learn in marriage. Some people are better than others right out the gate. Some couples, I'm just amazed, some of the young couples we serve, how well they communicate, how aligned they are. I just met with a couple, both they're 40 and 38, and they have a $7 million net worth.
Yeah.
And when we meet with them, they are so in tune. They both know everything that's going on financially. They know exactly what they're trying to accomplish. They're both working extremely hard in their careers and have had great economic success, but also they have a wonderful family, and they communicate right there in front of me. They talk about money in a way that's extremely healthy and open and transparent. And they may not have been there from day one, but to be 40 years old and kind of have it seemingly figured out is impressive to me. But it's
whether 17 million in net worth or 170,000 in net worth or anywhere else, again, the principles we're going to walk through are applicable to each. And this thing about tension over financial things in marriage, not uncommon. It's probably more uncommon to have a couple you run into that haven't had issues.
Right. And it's not only an issue, but you mentioned a friend who's divorced. You know, financial issues are typically ranked as the number two source of divorce behind infidelity. So it's a big challenge. It's a big challenge for a lot of people. I don't blame people. You know, maybe that's what the biggest takeaway of this first segment is. If you are married and you've had money challenges with your spouse, you're not alone. The good news is I really believe that couples have some huge advantages we'll talk about in the next segment if they can acknowledge each other's contribution to the marriage rather than see the other party as a problem. You know, I think of in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9, you know, many know this verse, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. That's true whether you're out digging a ditch somewhere or, you know, if the labor is the labor of, you know, pushing through life in a marriage and trying to make the money side work. But it's an area of great opportunity for many couples. I think even if they don't see a big problem, if they could be more unified around their money, I think they'd be shocked how much better their marriage could be. It may not be an issue that's going to end their marriage, but it's an opportunity to improve and enhance their marriage.
Yeah, you've already used the word unity a couple of times. I'm going to a little tease. I have another word that I want to bring into that conversation, but I want you to get more into that unity in spite of, you know, personalities and what have you that we're going to be talking about. If you just tuned in, we're visiting with Brian Cochran, president of John Moore Associates, and the topic today, money in marriage. And one thing we learned from this segment, money, it's never neutral. we're going to continue to look closer as we move on into the next segment, which Brian's titled, Unity Doesn't Mean Sameness, which I kind of teased already. We're going to get into that when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, in our first segment, I was actually looking forward to the weekend, letting you know about the Bible School of the Air, noon until 5 on Saturdays. Another great feature over the weekend is Gospel Brunch, which comes, it's like a four-course meal. 8 a.m. is the appetizer, a featured teacher each week. This week, it's Greg Laurie, Overcoming the Great Deceiver. The main course comes at 11:30 when we bring you the live service. This week, we'll hear from Nate Heitzig, Jesus, People, Go. It's actually not part of a series. It's a, kind of a standalone message, how Jesus people share Jesus. He'll be in Acts chapter 8 for that over the weekend. And then Paradas, if you miss it during Bible School of the Air, we re-air it as the third course for Gospel Brunch on Sunday. It starts just after the service from Calvary Church, usually around 12:15. Brian Nixon and others covering the nature of truth and inerrancy. And then the desserts, and every great meal, right, comes with a great dessert, and we're going to do that again this weekend. We feature a worship artist each week. Tommy Prophet and the project, The Resurrection of the King. That's all Gospel Brunch from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. with your host, Kelly. Sunday on KLYT. We're in the midst of a conversation with Brian Cochran, president of John Moore Associates. JohnMoore.com. I don't think I mentioned that in the first segment. And Brian, off the air, we were talking about this. Some of this you guys just covered and can be found, well, probably in multiple places, one of them being the Insights tab, a free resource, no cost, to go to JohnMoore.com and click on Insights.
Absolutely. This is one of our latest blog posts. And on the Insights page, we have about 2 to 3 blogs a month, plus a weekly podcast that we put up through YouTube that has the latest commentary on investment markets as well as financial planning topics.
So our topic today, money and marriage. And one of the things we talked about in the first segment, unity came up. But unity, Brian, doesn't necessarily mean cloning each other's behaviors or thoughts.
Or trying to convince your spouse to think the way you think.
Right.
So, yeah, healthy marriages actually just embrace those differences rather than treating them as an issue or a problem. And what we're talking about here when we say differences is there's different money personalities, Steve. Actually, the first thing we ask couples when they come in for their first meeting to do financial planning with us is we ask each member of the couple, are you a giver, a saver, or a spender? And I encourage you who are listening, pause for a second and ask, okay, which am I? And which is, if I have a spouse, which of those categories would my spouse fall into? Now, no one's 100% usually one or the other. We're all kind of a hybrid. But what's your dominant money personality between giver, saver, spender? Steve, do you want to confess yours?
I was looking at, I'll confess that I may not spend like, I don't know if I want to say like I should. I probably, especially lately, have tried to be more of a saver and a giver. Saver is probably, what is the dominant one. I will tell you, I will often choose, I'm going to just stay home. And I'm a homebody. And actually, what's sad about that is I don't get near as many of the honeydews done while I'm there as I have time. I thought of that actually in the last segment. You were saying in the first segment, whether it's the health or everything is money related. And even when you're like, I'm going to work on that. Oh, well, that means I got to go buy whatever money, it impacts everything. But to answer your question, saver, but I am a hybrid and I'm learning to be a spender. And we are different, you and your wife are, husbands and wives, we're different.
Well, and again, this is an area where people might say, well, that's a problem, right? Well, I'll tell you, some of the couples we serve in our financial planning process that are doing so well financially is because they have two personalities and they've chosen to incorporate both, not say that one's better than the other.
Yeah.
And most couples have sort of the financial person, the primary driver of the finances, the person who pays the bills and keeps an eye on the 401k balances and maybe enjoys it or just maybe feels like it's a strength of theirs. And sometimes that person's personality can become the more dominant one. But again, the successful couples we often serve, maybe it is a spender and a saver or a spender and a giver or a saver and a giver, some combination of those three. Where actually we see problems is if you have two spenders in a couple.
Yeah.
who's going to make sure you're saving? Yeah. If you have two givers in a couple, that sounds great. But God doesn't want us to give all of it away. He provides some things for our security and our enjoyment. So you need that balance, but that balance only comes if you respect the other party's financial personality and you limit the stretch of yours. So if you're a saver, you have to say, yes, we need to save and that's important, but my spouse who's a giver is right. We should also share with others. Or my spouse who's a saver is right. We should also or excuse me, a spender should also spend. So there's a balance there, and we can encourage one another with our strengths rather than judge the strengths of the other or the weaknesses of the other. And that can start to build that unity that we're using as the key term here.
Well, and there's a good place for me to come in because we're different. And actually, I forget if I found it in your notes. You know, we're talking about marriage, and often, you know, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. You know, we hear from Scripture. And I want to bring music into this. Okay, it's chord, C-O-R-D, but think this, C-H-O-R-D, and a chord, if I'm going to play a C chord on the piano, it's a C-D-F, C-D-F. There are three different notes that in unity, you know, and I'm not even sure musically, I'm not a music student, but think of that and harmony. You can have in harmony, there's different notes that they're very different, but together they create a harmony. And that's the other word I wanted to bring in because, I mean, when you hear a great harmony, Brian, isn't it sweet to the ears?
Yeah, it's a gift every time. So I think that's the key, is to find that. So rather than seeing the partner's different money personality as a problem or a threat or the cause of the money issues we have, look at it and see, okay, where can that be a strength? And being just self-aware, what's my money personality and what are the strengths and weaknesses of that?
Right. What are some of the things, Brian, couples, they can actually do to see those financial differences, not as weaknesses or annoyances, but really an opportunity to strengthen how they have stewarded the resources given to them?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to identify what are your strengths and weaknesses so that you're just aware of them and to view them as such, that that's not all just downside. Like if I'm a big-time saver, I shouldn't judge my spouse who's a giver and be like, oh, you're just always giving all of our money away. We need it for the future.
Should you judge them for spending, Brian?
No, I think there's limits to both.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a challenge there. And honestly, this is a little self-serving, but having an objective third party, you know,
non-emotional,
you, who is not there to judge you, but to help you meet your goals can be really good. I love the conversations we get into about money personalities, because it gives me as the financial planner the chance to look at the saver and say, hey, you've done a great job saving, but maybe there's some space here for you guys to enjoy some of the resources, you know. And I can look at a spender and say, hey, you really do a good job, you know, getting your family what they need every day and every year. And you do a great job planning those vacations for your family because you enjoy that.
Yeah.
But we got to be careful and make sure we're not spending more than is reasonable and where it might start interrupting your other goals. So an objective third party can kind of help create conversations, but also just acknowledge the strengths and call out the weaknesses where they lie. And then hopefully find that middle ground that brings the couple together in a place where the strengths are really enhanced and the weaknesses are hopefully balanced out a little bit.
Yeah. And what you just said there at the end, and I mentioned earlier, after 39 years of marriage, we are in the best unity, harmony when it comes to financial accountability to one another, when it comes to planning, when it comes to strategy and goals, and that's been a part of it is understanding each other better and appreciating the areas that you know, whether it's a spender, saver, or a giver, appreciating what each of us are trying to do and not to judge the other in it, and I think that's a big part. Yeah, that's a big part of what we've experienced more recently.
You said understanding, but then also, as we'll talk about in our next segment, being able to communicate through those differences so that it's not all just happening in between your ears. You know, it's not all in my head, but we're talking about this. We're acknowledging it in good communication. I think that's the next step. But I think that's a big thing, to be able to step back, acknowledge the differences, see the strengths and weaknesses in those differences, and then move forward, you know, unified And then again, we'll talk about communication so that you have sort of the tools to make that happen.
Very good. That's the next topic we're going to move on to is communication. And we'll do that when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I was absent from ABQ Connect this week. Of course, we aired some re-aired some content that we hope you enjoyed. It was timely, much of it, and glad to be live with you on today's broadcast. Before we jump back into our conversation with Brian Cochran, lots of families considering camp, right? Bible camp, maybe VBS, and you're not, maybe your church isn't doing either, and you'd like to find one. Well, we've posted what we have found on our website. Go to klyt.fm. In the Action Center, you'll find the VBS and Bible Camp guide. Go through that. And if you don't see your churches there, please send us the details. Especially as we head into June, July, August, we're going to see all kinds. And you can send the details to studio@klyt.fm. In studio with me, Brian Cochran, president of John Moore Associates. We're talking about money and marriage, and we're about to jump into the communication part of that. Brian, before we do, VBS and camp, did you do that as a kid?
I did.
Yeah?
I did, enjoyed it.
Great. What,
it kind of peaked for me with Young Life Camp back in the day.
Yeah.
Going off, that was awesome.
I went to Woodleaf. I think we've had this conversation. I am a Young Life kid. I went to Woodleaf Camp in Northern California, in the Sierra Nevadas, and then beyond Malibu, which were more intense than the Bible camp, the Beyond trips, where you, this is a long time. This is over 40 years ago. Putting on a backpack and going from sea level to 7,500 feet with a 50-pound pack.
Oh my gosh!
I'd die now. I mean, I felt like I was dying then. I would die now. But any memories stand out for you?
For me, Young Life Camp was one of the best times I had as a young person. And we went to the one, I can't remember the name of it now, it's in Central Oregon. It used to be the grounds of a cult, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the day. And they just, we had so much fun there and really learned a lot. And yeah, it was great. It was kind of a last hurrah for us and my high school buddies.
Well, I hope the listener chooses to go to that guide on the website and find maybe some memories for their kids, whether it's summer camp or VBS and what have you. But communication, Brian, when it comes to couples working through their finances, we have some great information to go through.
Yeah, I think the key theme here is that in the absence of good communication, you're functioning financially based on assumptions.
Yeah,
you're assuming what the priorities of your spouse might be. You're assuming what their fears, their goals, their concerns might be. And it's actually really interesting, Steve, when we sit down and we serve as that third party, as we discussed before, and we're kind of in the middle of this relationship with a couple, how often there's one member of the couple that's really driving everything. You'll notice, wow, they're doing like 99% of the talking. And if we just stop, and I'll always try to do this with body language, I'll physically move my whole body and point it towards the spouse, not just my head.
Yeah.
I'll lean in towards them. I'll say, tell me what's your biggest priority today, or how do you feel about that goal, or what do you think's going right financially or going wrong financially? And they almost seem sometimes shocked that anyone cares to ask. And to me, that's a huge sign that there's a lack of understanding and communication in that couple, because it's easy to take a back seat if it's not an area of strength or interest for you. But that can turn into not just delegating the financial actions, but actually, giving up your influence on the financial process as a family.
Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier, goals. Those don't just happen through osmosis together. I mean, they as far as having unity, there has to be communication and an understanding of, is it fair to say an understanding of expectations?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And in the absence of that, people assume. They assume the motives, they assume the intent.
Yeah.
So rather than acknowledging your spouse as a saver and is just concerned about the future, you might say, my spouse is cheap. Rather than acknowledging that your spouse might be a spender and shows love by giving gifts, okay, or by making the home nice and beautiful,
yeah,
and spending on things around the house, you might say my spouse is irresponsible with money because she's spending all the time. Well, maybe that's part of how she is, you know, filling her role as she sees it in the family. It's not about being irresponsible. So when you have those assumptions, you get this distance that a lack of communication creates. Whereas if you have curiosity and good communication, the result is a connectedness, an understanding of one another that can preempt any disagreements and all that. So a lot of people fight about money and they want to fix it afterwards. But how do you prevent the argument in the first place? How do you prevent the disconnect? Well, you communicate and you create that understanding of where the other party's coming from.
You know, as we walk through communication, I'm looking at your notes, and some of the you know, you think of communication, and it should be between the spouses, husband and wife. Sometimes this so sound a little talk to yourself. I was looking at your notes and I'm like, you know, I find myself doing this, you know, cause you can get, you know, emotional when these conversations start. And one of the first things here, it says, to ask yourself, why does this bother me? Mm-hmm. And self, you know, reflection, looking in and just like, why is that bugging you? Are you just a grumpy old man, you know, or is there really something of substance to maybe communicate to someone else so they can understand you better? But I do think it's kind of like holding up a mirror, you know, yeah, I really appreciate all the notes, but I was just looking at that. That's absolutely something I've really learned to do as I've gotten more gray hair, whether it's money or other things. Mm-hmm. Why is this bothering me?
Well, a lot of times the answer to that, this is again where it goes beyond dollars and cents and numbers, is you feel unseen by your spouse when they make certain money decisions. You feel they don't respect your sense of a need for security or safety, or, you know, you feel like, you know, they're making decisions without you. So you feel unheard, unseen. I mean, there's just a lot of things that can come out of that really have little to do with money, and they have to do with what's going on in your marriage, you know, beyond the dollars. You know, and then ask yourself also, what value am I protecting? You know, if I don't want my spouse to spend, well, what value are they violating that I need to protect? Or what value might my spouse be protecting by their actions? You know, so it's an interesting challenge. And you can see also where when there's scarcity in a marriage, when it's a lean time, all of these things become more elevated, right? When there's a little margin and we can give and take a little bit because there's an extra wiggle room, you know, that, oh, you can save more and I still have enough to spend, or I can spend more and you still have enough to save, then you're okay. But when couples have financial tension because there's not enough dollars to meet all the goals, that's where this comes up sometimes. So these conflicts actually usually have less to do with how much is enough and how much money you have, but it has to do with security, again, generosity, experiences, past experiences and present, stability. You know, some spouses value stability over all other things based on their personality. And then also legacy. You know, there's the multi-generational aspect of money.
Yeah.
And what does it say about me beyond my time?
Well, you've often shared scripture talking about, you know, a man who doesn't provide for his household. And as a head of a household, that weighs heavy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes we see that in couples where when, let's say you've got a saver and a spender. Let's say the husband is the primary breadwinner and he's a saver and the wife is a spender and may have employment, but isn't really driving the income for the household. You know, the husband can feel almost disrespected if the money is not saved or managed more wisely because it's like, well, I'm working hard to provide for this and you're spending it all. And that can be a common tension we see between especially higher income earning spouses where they feel like they're earning enough all the time, but it's not being stewarded wisely. And again, I don't think there's malintent there by the spending spouse, but what's behind that spending? You know, why is the, you know, and why are you not on the same page on that is the question. So understanding each other, as we said before, the unity part is important and that's great, but you also need to communicate. And then sometimes the communication leads to a sacrifice. You know, I need to bend a little bit here.
I like the word sacrifice there as opposed to compromise. I think in Christian conversations, compromise can often be seen as, you know, when you're talking about sin, you know, you're doing things right and then you compromise, you know. But sacrifice, understanding the other loving them is wanting the best for them. And obviously the best for them is whatever God instructs us to do. But understanding, you know, where they are and loving them, and, you know, to be honest with you, we expect our spouse to love us and want the best for us. And the emotional, all the kinds of love in spite of us. And, you know, so why should we not, you know, in spite of the what we would maybe consider flaws in some of these areas, love them through that, understand, and maybe even join in, and then the conversation, the communication is the way you can together decide where that both sacrificing some to get to a place where you're both in unity and harmony.
Yep. And honoring each other. And one of the ways you honor your spouse is to kind of meet them halfway at times, you know, sacrifice a little bit on your side. So that could mean spending differently or delaying gratification and saving or prioritizing unity over just your personal preferences and your biases that may go from a strength to a weakness if they go too far. So I think all of that's really key. And I love in Philippians chapter 2, it says, consider others more significant than yourselves. Well, who else did you consider more significant than your spouse? I mean, that's just really powerful. And again, these principles are always so transcendent, right, Steve? I mean, this goes beyond money. This is just good marriage advice, you know, marriage principles. But where we see couples, again, go kind of downhill here or go into struggles is when they're not honoring their spouse. They're not trying to find a middle ground. They're not trying to understand their spouse's perspective. And there's one party that's sort of railroading the other. And that's just not a formula for joy.
Yeah, well, and I love, back to your notes, because you always did a great job preparing for these full hour, well, every week, Brian, but a note I don't want to pass over. You wrote, not every disagreement requires someone to win. Sometimes, yeah, if you win, especially those of you that are really competitive, if you quote unquote lose, you feel beat up. And when instead, you know, you should feel like you are, if you're in unity, and you're having these conversations, and you're each sacrificing some and understanding each other better, there's a win-win.
Absolutely. And there's some humility in that sometimes, to say that my way doesn't have to be the way, and it's not the only way or the right way.
That's right.
All the time. And what I really desire above all is to love my spouse and be unified. We keep using that word unity a lot, but to preserve that rapport and trust and unity is what's really going to move you forward and keep a financial disagreement or a financial rub created by your different personalities, you know, keep that from turning into something that can be much more destructive to the relationship as a whole.
Well, to close out this segment, Brian, and before we go to a break and close out with a shorter segment, but just kind of summarizing what we've talked about, some practical steps, some practical ways, in addition to what we've already said, where couples can be having healthier money conversations this week.
I think the first thing a lot of people don't do is they never dedicate time for a committed money conversation, what we often call a money date.
Yeah.
So if you can start by setting a money date and just simply acknowledging each other's personality of giver, saver, spender, and then each writing down three primary financial things that are important to you, goals or concerns, that's a great place to start and doesn't take hours.
Okay.
But making a committed time to talk about money.
And I think as you try to solve these problems, understanding you're not going to solve them overnight, and you said write down three, but if you can, kind of nail one now, and then, you know, practice makes permanent. So if you continue to do these things, all those different points you're writing down, you'll get there. But it does take practice, regular practice, and good, you know, practicing well, good practices. All right. We're going to take a quick break, come back and close our conversation, and another reminder about Unity on the way after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, Brian and I have been talking a lot about marriage during this segment. I do want to remind you on our website in our Action Center, we've had this here the whole month. This is from Focus on the Family, their Hope Restored, from their marriage ministry. They're investing $1,000 toward group marriage intensives. You know, all kinds of couples, they want help in their marriage, but they hesitate because of financial concerns. Now, through Marriage Investment Initiative, Focus on the Family is helping to remove that barrier. Listen, so couples can take the next step toward healing, because your marriage is worth fighting for. The details are found in the Action Center at klyt.fm. And as I mentioned, Brian Cochran in studio with us, a conversation today on marriage and money. Man, Brian, there you go. Focus on the Family is investing money in marriages. What a fantastic job they do with the different resources that they have.
Yeah, and acknowledging that a healthy marriage, what a great thing for a family, for a culture. You know, when marriages are strong, it's just such a better thing for everyone.
Yeah, and part of that is being financially responsible together, learning to walk through a lot of things that we've talked about today. And as we mentioned, you know, in these conversations, winning isn't the goal. It's so rare you see people that are exactly on the same page and in agreement with how things should be done, and perfect agreement, it shouldn't be the goal. Really moving forward together as a couple who you are and finding a way to best honor God in that.
Yeah, and I think that's a very biblical mindset in my mind, is that perfection can't be the goal because there was only one perfect man.
Yeah.
And we can strive to be like him, but we're going to make mistakes. And when it comes to couples dealing with money, perfection is not about, you know, it's not about perfection because I'm never going to get my way 100%. My spouse will never get her way 100%. But we can move forward with unity and agreement. And in doing so, we can actually create more connection with our money decisions rather than possible challenges and rupture. And that's, I think, a huge part of this, is that money is so often seen as a problem in marriages, but when it's, you know, when you implement these principles, when you look for unity, when you look for connection, when you seek to understand your spouse's financial personality, it can actually be a source of consistency and strength, and it's always going to be part of your life.
Yeah.
So if you can get this part right, and it's the consistent part that is a foundation of unity and strength, then when everything else is happening in your marriage, it's like, yes, we don't always agree on how to raise our children in challenging times. Yes, we're going to go through health issues and extended family issues and losing a family member. All these things are going to hit us and challenge us, but we have this foundation where we're always talking consistently about how to steward what God's given us, and it gives us a place where we can be in alignment and strength. And so healthy couples will intentionally create that communication. They'll listen, and then they'll make the sacrifices necessary to be unified.
Brian, speak to the couple who, hey, we've done that. And we even saw improvement in our conversations, our communication, and in our financial accountability and stewardship. And then, you know, this happened. You know, even if you agree, and even agree to disagree in some areas, and are working on this communication, and the rough patch comes, you know, financially, because of decisions, you know, one or both or all have made. Give them some encouragement that, you know, hey, look, if you apply all this, it isn't going to necessarily be all, you know, beauty.
Well, and it's a good analogy to our Christian faith, where we can seek the mind of Christ, follow his commandments and the principles. And does that guarantee you a trouble-free life? No. I mean, you can be unified in money, you can be doing everything right, and there's still things are going to hit you from out of nowhere with your finances. The key, though, is you're going to be so much better equipped to manage those if you have this strong foundation. Well,
and you said just a minute ago, consistency.
Yeah.
Consistency, going back to the things you know and practicing those things.
Do I understand how my spouse might respond to the situation? Do I understand, you know, the principles? And do we already have a line of communication about money opened up so that we can address this as a couple instead of separate?
Yeah, and we're just about out of time, but I want to share this because you prepared it in your notes. One of the scriptures we promised we'd bring. You wrote down Amos 3:3. You want to share that?
Yeah. Can two walk together unless they are agreed?
Yeah.
We have to be aligned in what's important before we go down this journey that's going to have bumps in the road.
Yeah, and I think a key word in that is together.
Because
you could even be both walking to the same, but if you're not doing it together, in with the communication, with the unity, it's awfully difficult to be agreed.
Absolutely.
Brian Cochran has been our guest, and Brian, I always appreciate your time. We got maybe 30 seconds. Anything to be watching for in addition to what's already on the Insights tab?
I'll have a new blog post coming out in about a week on the topic of kind of mid-year financial decisions people can make to be better prepared for the second half of 2026.
All right, Brian, thanks for your time. Look forward to having you back real soon. And thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.